OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Stream live football action with a Now TV Sky Sports Pass. Your sport on your terms.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course I would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course I want to play at the weekend.
Hello there. You're welcome along to Golf Weekly. It's Joe Malloy here. We are very happy to have your company once again this week. As ever, we are here with thanks to our friends at Now TV, where you can stream your sport on your terms, be it Premier League, EFL, Serie A, or let's be honest, more importantly, the golf. And we are talking about the Masters in just 2 weeks' time. It's here at last. Very happy to say we have Fionn Davenport with us. Good afternoon.
Hey, Joe.
And Peter Lawrie, hello to you.
Hello, Joe. I nearly said hello, Fionn.
No, you did.
Ahead of myself. Say hello to everybody today.
No, Nathan Murphy. He's taking a well-earned break. We've lots to discuss. We are broadcasting live on all our social channels. I'll keep an eye on the YouTube comments, so get them into us if you want to join in the chat. Few things to discuss. We will touch on a very interesting interview Bubba Watson has done. By the way, Bubba Watson, two consecutive top 10 finishes in the lead-in to Augusta is worth noting, but he's done a very interesting interview on his mental health issues. Fionn will take us through that. We will be talking Jack Nicklaus. He's had a look at the two contenders, and he's pretty sure he knows the right man for you working in America. And before all that, there is golf to discuss, because we had the Zozo Championship won by Patrick Cantlay, shot ahead of Justin Thomas and John Rahm. First of all, Peter, life at the driving range still closed, still counting down the days?
Yes, very quiet. Me and my digger, I got a lend of a digger, digging a few holes out there for drainage and literally just tipping away, to be honest with you. I haven't actually hit any balls myself, but full rain gear on, woolly hat, and enjoying the peace and quiet of walking around the field.
If you were to hit balls, would you hit off the mats or off the grass?
Right now, probably off the mats because it's so soft.
Yeah. They're no good for you, those mats.
Oh, well, my mats are super.
Your mats are?
My mats are good.
In general, though, no good for the average golfer to be getting very good on the mats.
No, look, a mat will help you a little bit because the club bounces into the ball a little bit. You don't see a true reflection on strike, but to keep your hand-eye coordination in and to flex those muscles and all the rest, there's no problem hitting off, Matt.
Fionn Davenport, what's going on? Let's start with the golf. We watched events at Sherwood. Patrick Cantlay came up on the outside. 9 birdies, 7 under 65. He's the world number 14. He was 3 shots back at the start of the day, Cantlay. Mm. He's always a brilliant ball striker. 28 years of age from California. This is his third win now in less than 90 starts. So he just kind of got going, kept going, and Thomas and Rahm stopped finding fairways.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. As you said, terrific ball striker, but of all of the players in the top 10, he has the fewest wins. But this is a good one, and came up the inside rail, really. And as you say, I mean, I thought nobody would beat Thomas, but yeah, he kind of, like, even though he was 3 under, like, he just kind of gave it away, just started making problems for himself. And yeah, 9 birdies. He's just absolutely out of his skin. I thought it was a really good tournament to watch. You have some very good play by Thomas for 3 days, 3.5 days, and Rahm. Just a nice selection of top quality golf. Disappointed to see Tiger. Geez, not even, I mean, what did he finish? 72nd out of 78 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, what did he throw in? A 6 under on day 2, but that was it. And then went backwards thereafter. But Cantlay, really, really nice. Did you see what he said afterwards? He was, I was able to win one of the tournaments Tiger won last year, he says. So now I'm just going to go try and win the other event that Tiger won last year.
He's a lovely player, Peter. He just seems to have to be quite patient for his putter to get hot. He's waiting around a lot of weeks.
Yeah, when he got himself into the situation, he nearly backed up on it. You know, he missed the green with a wedge coming into 16, wasn't it, into the par five, and made bogey from nowhere. And that nearly handed the tournament back to Ram and Thomas. So he looks that kind of player who gets himself in a position and then kind of very difficult to push on from us. And he doesn't push on because of the putter. But look, he's a very good player, you know, top 10 after top 10 after top 10. He gives himself a chance to win each week. But I was disappointed in Ram and Thomas, to be honest with you. They kind of went backwards over the last couple of holes. Thomas hit some beautiful tee shots coming in, you know, setting himself up, and then, you know, did nothing really. He had a great chance to make eagle, and he hit it way right on the par five into a hazard. Okay, he made five, but it was a miraculous five that he made. But in general, he didn't put any pressure on Cantlie at all.
No, not really. So Thomas and Ram, stop finding fairways. McIlroy is an interesting one this week. Finished 17th in the end, 29 birdies, which is a Rory McIlroy tournament record. I mean, he's probably had lots of tournaments where he's had a lot of birdies. So 29 tournament birdies record, 8 shots off the winner. He threw in 3 double bogeys and 8 bogeys as well, and just talked about trying to eliminate the mistakes. You're thinking, and no kidding. What caught the eye in the first round was him snapping his club. 140 yards, wedge in hand, and Fionn misses the green. Mm. And we've been talking about this a lot lately, that this is an Achilles heel at the moment. And I like, if we miss a green from even that kind of range or with a wedge in our hand, we're angry with ourselves. I can only imagine how frustrated McIlroy is from 140 yards with a wedge to be missing a green.
I would wager that he's not just frustrated that he missed the green in this instance, but that this is a feature of his game that has been at him for a long time. I mean, look, we talk about it. It's not a secret that with a short iron in his hand, he's not nearly as effective as he should be. And perhaps he's been working on the wedges, and this is just a reflection of frustration that the work hasn't shown fruit yet. Or perhaps he's just going, ugh, this nonsense again, or whatever it is. But I suppose is that one of the things that it really shows is that I don't remember, other than these, you know when he does that thing on the green when he doesn't read it the way, or the putt doesn't go the way he reads, and he kind of throws his hand at it. It's like, oh my God, what? How did I not do that? That's about the only expression of out of control annoyance that Rory has ever demonstrated. So him snapping a club I was like, what the, it's not something you've really seen. I mean, look, for all the brilliant shots that he's hit some clunkers as well. But like, he just kind of tends to just get on. His head can drop, when he's not playing great, he kind of drops in. He doesn't have that bounce in his step. Like when Rory really feels, it's almost as though you feel the air. You can see the air going into his chest. His chest rises up. He walks with his head up, and he's almost bouncing down the fairway. Whereas when he's not playing well, he tends to kind of let his head drop, which is hardly surprising. It's psychology 101. But to see him snap a club, that's an expression of frustration that I haven't really seen in him for ever, if ever,
Yeah. Peter, what did you make of it?
I want to be critical, but then I say to myself, well, do we look at it? Have we put Rory too much on a pedestal? And is there too many other good players around him now that he is actually not, the world beater that we thought he was? And do we say to ourselves, if he's ever going to get back to the world number one spot, he has to kind of put himself back into golf completely, give himself 100% to golf. And I think at this stage in his life, maybe that's not number one in his in what he wants to achieve.
The thing is, though, you see the frustration. You know what I mean? It's not like he hits that shot and he's like, hey, whatever, you know, life's all good. I've got a perspective on these things. I think he's still really trying very hard to get back to where he was. You know, he's not just taking that with a degree of I'm not too bothered. He's breaking his, he's literally snapping his club on a fairway.
Okay, but do you, frustration comes when things don't work out for you. Now, is he putting the work in for it to work out for him? Is that why he's frustrated? Or is he frustrated that it's not working because it's not working?
Yeah, we don't quite know. So he shot 73 in the first round. And then, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff here. 67 in the second round, 67 third round, and 66 in the fourth round. And you look at what went wrong in the first round, that bad round. He was 69th in the field, and this is out of 78 players. 69th off the tee, and he was 72nd from the fairway. Now, he cleaned that right up to the point where, you know, his approaches to the green in the third round, he was second best in the field. And his driving, he was second best in the field round two and round four. Ironically, his putting was at its best on the first day and then, you know, kind of mixed. He was 43rd, then 66th, then 26th out of 72 players. Like there's loads of good stuff in there if he can knit things together. The interesting point he made, Fionn, was about Augusta now, and we're not going to see Rory until Augusta, is he is quite enjoying the lack of hype, the lack of crowds. He says, I much prefer it this way. So... it's, you know, he's tried every other approach into Augusta at this stage. Might as well try this one.
But he also said a few weeks ago that he missed the crowds. You know, it's
yeah. I was just about to say that, Phil.
Oftentimes with Rory or with anybody, it's like we hang on to their every word or we go,
sure.
We look for meaning. And the thing is like everybody, you know, like you have to take everything with a pinch of salt, really. You know, I'm really enjoying the golf without the crowds. Ooh, I really miss the crowds. They amp me up. Justin Thomas actually made the point afterwards. He said that he misses the crowds, that he goes, I'm paraphrasing, but it seems weird to say, but it's hard sometimes to maintain focus if that kind of atmosphere isn't there. So who knows? What is interesting, though, is that you're absolutely right. And the stats show that, sadly for him, he played himself out of the tournament on day one. I mean, this was a course with the conditions being what they were, other than, you know, the storms on the Sunday, that really were just throwing birdies at you, you know? And he just left himself a mountain to climb. And with so many other good players shooting low rounds on day one, it was always going to be a big ask for him. But as you said, like, I mean, he threw in some good numbers, you know? He just... just what's missing is that dominating display. And where did we see it last? It's well, certainly before lockdown was the last time we saw any kind of dominant display.
Peter, the interesting question you can give us the pros perspective on. So, and Mark D makes the point as well, most birdies in the field, explanation mark on YouTube. I'll get to some other comments in a second. So there's a volatility to his game at the moment, but that volatility includes the ability to get birdies. Would you not prefer to be a pro who is making lots and lots of birdies and also lots and lots of mistakes in the hope that you can clean that up, as opposed to the pro who's just making par in every hole?
Well, you want to be the guy making birdies. Absolutely. Yeah. You want to have that in your game. And then you just want to somehow get rid of all the other crap that's there that, you know, pegs you backwards. But if you go to every hole and you want to make birdie, that's a great way to think about it, because you're not going to back off it. And plus, it has to say something about his putting as well, where we've always questioned his putting. If he's making 29 birdies, he's obviously hitting it close enough or putting exceptionally well.
Yeah, because I was watching Radar, Wayne Riley on Sky. He does these rounds with players, you know, records a round. I think it's a... which club manufacturer? Not sure. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. He does these rounds with players, plays a round with a Louis Westhuizen or whoever. And he made a point. He said, I can still make pars, but I've stopped being able to make birdies since I stopped playing. You know, he's like, pars I can kind of make, birdies just kind of beyond me. And us as amateurs, like, how often do we make a birdie, Fionn? It's like once every four or five rounds, you know, for an average player playing average stuff.
If you can knock in one birdie a round, you've played really well, for, I think, for a bogey golfer.
Yeah.
Like you're like, wow, you know, hit it really close on that par three, or I hit my second, you know, and but yeah, I mean, I think obviously not being a pro, but it seems to make sense, doesn't it? That almost psychologically, if you're making birdies, you're in an accelerated curve of positivity. And then you say to yourself, I have control over eliminating the crap, as Peter puts it. But whereas if you're just making pars, obviously what's missing is the ability to get it really close. And so, you know, it absolutely makes sense, even to the observer, that like you're much better off being a birdie machine who then has a task of works of just cleaning up the shit. Like, you know, not, you know, just make sure that you don't put yourself into any trouble.
Yeah. So next time we'll see Rory as Augusta, Peter. Final thoughts on him for the time being?
Look, very hard to say. He's one of my favorites for Augusta, but he's one of the one players who has two chances now to be, to have his Grand Slam and two chances in a row around the same major. Would I write him off? No. Would I be putting, would I be betting on him heavily to win the Masters right now, the way his game is in? You can't have those mistakes going to Augusta. Yes, you have to make the birdies, but you can't have the mistakes, because those mistakes in Augusta, they're not only bogeys, they're double bogeys. And that's what he can't have on his card. Just going back to Fionn, most pros would say, I want to make six birdies around. And that gives you a kind of a fallback position of, you're going to shoot 66, so you make two bogeys, you might shoot 68. But you shoot 68 all the days of your life, you'd be a very rich person, and you'd have won lots of tournaments.
Yeah,
makes absolute sense.
Shane Colgan points out to me, it's ping. Ping is where Wayne Riley does those videos. They're not bad at all, actually. I've watched a good few of them. Lee Westwood does one. That's very good as well. The players all like Wayne Riley. Was he reporter on tour your day? When did he stop playing, Peter?
Radar stopped early 2000s, I think. Really nice guy. A bit very eccentric, but knows what goes through a player's mind. So he knows when to talk to you and not. But he comes in with the, you know, his comments can be cutting sometimes, but they're truthful. So you just have to you have to listen to them.
Well, on the Sky coverage, sorry, Phil, just to finish on the Sky coverage, he was on in the TV studio and talking about Rory. He just said, does he want it enough? That was his ultimate line on Rory. Does he want it enough?
Did you see him and Rob Lee get quite animated about Bryson? It was quite interesting.
Oh.
You know, they were quoting that, like, I mean, they were almost, the two of them were almost pulling their hair out with frustration at the golf authorities not addressing this blatant issue that Jack Nicklaus has brought up for the last quarter century. And then at one point, as the discussion was getting quite animated, Rob Lee kind of pulls back for a second and he goes, oh, by the way, can I just say, it's like Bryson's doing nothing wrong here. And to which Rader goes, no, absolutely. He's not doing anything wrong. But it was such an interesting, it's almost as though, and I wonder if this is not a direction that the Sky team have deliberately gone to, is rather than the super polished comment on what you see approach, which is obviously at the heart of all broadcasting, that they want, much like in their fellow cohorts over in Sky Football, they want the personality of the individual. So, like, you know, tell me what you think as well, you know? And if we see a little bit of how you feel about the underlying issues that affect golf, that'll make for a richer experience. And I have to say, so far, so good. I enjoy listening to them in a way that, like, that the, it's not just kind of pablum all the time. I mean, I certainly love when Butch Harmon used to just kind of, like, just talk about what you're seeing, and then always super positive. But I enjoy when they actually kind of express an opinion, even if it's a controversial opinion about a matter. I think it's all for the better of the broadcasting.
I think a lot of them come from, they're all ex-golfers, they're all ex-pros, they've all done quite well as professionals, and they're willing to put their opinions out there, and they don't talk about themselves, they talk about the situation. They don't relate everything to themselves. Monty, when he was on Sky, everything was about him and how he did it, and while Nick Doherty, Rob Lee, Radar, it's all about what's happening, and they give their opinion. And it's far less formal now. If you ever,
there's definitely been a shift since David Livingston moved on.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. Mm.
Like Nick Doherty turns up, as you said, in his t-shirt and his runners and sits there in studio, and it's much better, I think, and out of keeping, like in a nice way, with the American style where they're wearing the matching t-shirts. How is that still a thing on CBS? Oh dear. Shane Colgan makes the point on YouTube, if Sky are after Tell Us How You Feel, then surely Peter deserves a contract. They can't handle Peter. That's one step too far.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'd be getting, they'd have one of these buzzers on me, you know, like you have dogs for barking. And they press the buzzer and I'd be electrocuted for saying too much.
Joe Johnston, any ideas on golf courses in the greater Dublin area that offer good third level student membership? No idea, Joe.
In the greater Dublin area, I there's a good few of them that do very good packages for under 30s. I know, yeah. Lachine Springs does one, Rogenstown does one. There's quite a few out there that will do them.
Okay. So just to finish up on Zozo, we mentioned Tiger Woods, 72nd out of 77. By the way, Phil was 76th. Those two played together on the Sunday.
What was the bet on Sunday? That's what I want to know.
I wonder. He did something Woods he's never done in his entire career before. So he had bogey or worse on 3 par 5s in the round. Now, if we did that, we'd be kind of miffed. Bogey or worse on the 3 par 5s. Basically, and here's the overwhelming stat, through his 6 rounds this season, I know it's not a huge sample size, but it's all we have, Woods is now negative strokes gained in every single category, in putting, around the green, approach shots and drives. He's negative strokes gained putting. I give up. I've been making the case. I said Sherwood was the litmus test because his record there is absolutely outrageous. I watched all of his shots, including the 60-60 shot, which was obviously much better, but even his final round, he has just too much to clean up on. He's just nowhere near sharp. The only thing, and it's about the only thing you could say that's positive, is he was walking relatively freely even by the Thursday. Paul Azinger was making the point on commentary with Woods. You know he's stiff when he's taking these tiny, gentle steps, but his stride was long and loose, so his back appeared to hold up across the 4 days. But I mean, that's probably Fionn. The only positive. I relinquish the Woods is going to surprise us in Augusta argument.
He also said afterwards is that he putted very well, that he felt he was rolling it nicely. And so he was very happy with the way the improvements in his putting stroke. But I'm looking at him going, geez, like, never mind. He's unrecognizable from the player he once was. He's such a ways off the player he was last year.
Yeah.
And again, on this like relatively easy course for the pros, you know, where what was the winning score? Was it 19, 20, 21, whatever it was?
Yeah.
To be scratching around par, to be scratching around level par for the 4 rounds, even allowing for his, just doesn't augur well, given that he's not going to play again before the Masters. And very disappointing for fans. And I mean, shot better than Phil. It was interesting. They were talking afterwards. I think it was Mickelson in the they were talking, because the two of them had like a proper chat. I think they were playing with a guy, Adam Long. Did you see
the two of them off the golf course?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But did you see the tweet that he put out? So you're texted your starting time, and it was Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson start, whatever it was, 8:21 a.m. And he tweeted something to the effect of, this is like, ooh, a lot of PGA wins in this group, like this, including himself. It was very funny. And, afterwards, like, you know, they have been paired in the first 2 rounds on a number of occasions by you know, golf to make sure that you have the two star turns playing together. But it's not that often that they play in the final groupings or in the weekend groupings together. But whereas in the past, the two wouldn't talk, you know, they'd be focused because there was nothing at stake other than, can we just get to the end of this round before it starts raining really, really heavily? They actually had plenty of chats. And one of the things that Mickelson admitted was, is that, look, I mean, it's there. It's just really, really hard to put it together for four consecutive days. And
yeah,
and that's ultimately, we can talk around. And I realize that there's a five-year, like, I mean, Tiger made the joke. He goes, oh, there's 5 years before I'm thinking about the seniors tour. But that is ultimately it. That comes down to it. At their age, putting it together for four rounds is the hardest thing of all. And yeah, and we, you know, can you see it happen?
I was listening to Hank Haney, by the way, and he was reacting to Wood saying that he put it really well. And Haney was saying, what complete and utter BS. He was 65th in putting. He's like, you have to ignore every single thing Tiger says after a round. It's almost never true. Although he did make one very interesting point. And he said, the one thing is Woods may be telling the truth because they've changed the greens at Sherwood. And he said, Woods, obviously, look, he can read a putt. Of course he can. But he said, Woods' greatest strength on the greens when it comes to making putts, aside from his stroke, is he's got almost like a photographic memory for break. So, yes, he can read a putt, like I said. But, I mean, he remembers what way a thing broke 12 years ago, like that. Now, I can't remember what way something broke a month ago, even a clean castle, my home course. I'm often over a putt cone. I've no idea which way this breaks. So Woods is not that way. So Haney was saying, actually, them changing the greens at Sherwood would have really thrown him. So potentially he was rolling the ball well, but it just wasn't falling in the right spots. Obviously at Augusta, he knows every nook and cranny. But that's Tiger.
Most pros would, having gone back to different venues, would remember breaks from the year previous and pin placements. Majority of the times, pin placements are very, very similar year in, year out from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And you do remember, well, especially Woods being in so many positions that he has been to win tournaments when putts are so important, that you do remember which way things break.
That's unbelievable to me. It's funny. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but sometimes if I can't sleep at night and I've played golf that day, I'll just replay the round in my head and nod off somewhere around the 12th. And I can remember a round perfectly, but the putts definitely are the first thing to go from the memory. What way they, you know, that's amazing to me. I can't remember them the same way. I'm probably not concentrating on them the way you guys are.
Maybe so. Like, I can still remember, you know, I grew up in Newlands and I could close my eyes and tell you, having not played Newlands in, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years, tell you exactly which way the break would be. Wow. But there again, like, you would remember an interview that you've done 5 years ago and what that person said. I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, Joe doesn't remember. Broadcasters.
I remember what I said. I don't really remember what they said.
I remember when I first started in radio, I remember someone saying to me, an experienced, someone who had been around, they go, I have someone scheduled for an interview and I was talking to another presenter in the station. And they said, I can't remember. I think I interviewed them before. And I walked away and in my head, I was going, how could you not remember whether you interviewed this person or not? Like, it just seems so bizarre to me. And sure enough, within a year or two, it's because you're interviewing so many people, it's easy to forget. And you have this, it's a bit like taking exams sometimes. You prep for interviews with laser-like focus. You do the brief, you study the brief. You pick out the questions you want to ask. And because you have another interview in 15 minutes, you dump everything from the interview that's just happened and focus on the next one. So it becomes so much easier to forget. And it did happen to me. I forgot that I've interviewed. I've had embarrassing moments where someone has come back on and go, oh, nice to meet you. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I was here like 2 years ago. I'm like, all right. Yeah, of course. Of course.
I know.
I give you a good one. A guy that was the best player in Newlands when I was growing up, a guy called Paddy Butler. He came to the range recently And he says, Peter, have a look at me here. What am I doing wrong? And I says, well, Paddy, that's not the way you swung it many years ago. And he says, well, what do you mean? And I says, well, you used to swing it this way. I could, because he was the best player at the time, you know, you'd study his swing as a kid. I could tell him how he swung it when he played his best.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So it's just, your golf is a funny, you get it into your head.
It is, yeah. I think you remember the things in life that you have an emotional attachment to or an intensity towards, yeah, don't you? Yeah. And that's just the way our brains work. Definitely emotion. It's why, you know, why do advertising agencies try and make us cry? It's because we'll remember that ad, John Lewis at Christmas, all that kind of business. So look, Bubba Watson, second consecutive top 10. Watson was in similarly good form last year before the Masters and finished tied 12th. So it doesn't mean he's a banker, but it means obviously he's got pedigree and he's not in bad form. That much we can say. Fionn, he is and has been obviously a pretty interesting character from the off in a bunch of different ways. Like, he has not done a winning interview without bursting into tears. We have seen him abuse poor old Ted Scott, his caddy, on numerous occasions. He's different. So he's done a really interesting interview. You've gone through this where, yeah, he's detailed pretty significant mental health issues.
So he spoke to Steve DiMeglio of USA Today, and he just opened up about crippling anxiety that has dogged him for years. And perhaps it's not, you know, it wouldn't perhaps kind of raise your interest as much to say, oh, you know, I've got this anxiety, because, I mean, he's talked about having OCD in the past, and he admits, he's always said he's been very fidgety. You watch him, he can be very... But no, I mean, it's how bad it got. So all that weight loss.
Yeah.
Which you think is down to, is he trying to improve something to do with athletic? No, it's to do with an inability to eat because of stress. He just stopped eating.
Wow.
He lost 35 pounds because of it. And for a guy like him, like, he really got thin. He was rushed to hospital because he thought he was having a heart attack. Like, the palpitations got so bad. He obsessed with death, so much so. And in this, he talks about his father, Jerry, and his namesake, who is a former Green Beret who had post-traumatic stress disorder and died in 2010 after a battle with cancer. But it was interesting to hear him echo his own father's experiences of PTSD, and that how he identified that stress, that sense of that crippling, gnawing anxiety that just eats away at you. And in Bubba's own case, physically ate away at him to the point that, as I said, he lost all this weight. He admits to having sought professional help, was in frequent contact with doctors. So DiMeglio really pushed him on this. And he goes, look, I've never made a secret of the fact that I've got issues. I've got attention deficit disorder. I'm jittery. But he says, and the quote here is, and ultimately Bubba Watson is still a product, you know, he's still the kid from Baghdad, Florida, isn't he? He's still the guy who's kind of quirky and a bit offbeat. And by all accounts, very, very funny. And the quote that struck me was like, I've sought help in many different ways, many different forms, trying to overcome it. And then he goes, it really comes down to me being nuts. I'm trying to make light of it because using humor helps, but it's all in my head. It's all anxiety. And he cataloged the things that he's scared of. He literally is scared of everything. Flying, crowded spaces, the spotlight, COVID-19. He worries about being a good father, being a good husband. He worries about being a good friend, a good Christian. He stresses about life as a celebrity. Is that it's almost as though there is no corner of his life that gives him a sense of calm or a sense of peace. And obviously golf went the way of it. And, you know, he's gone. What is he? He went number two in the world at once upon a time. I think he's 65th now. And he started taking CBD and then started worrying about all of the drug tests that he voluntarily took, you know, that he, and of course there's no THC in CBD. So, but then started stressing about, oh my God, what if I get caught taking a drug that's going to cost me a ban or whatever? Mm. And he The good news is, like often these things, is that the interview isn't given until you feel like you've rounded a corner. And he feels like he's rounded a corner. He feels he goes, I'm at an all-time high. And clearly two top 10 finishes indicate that he has found a measure of calm and peace that allows him to play good golf. But more than that, is the picture being painted here is of a man who's had demons at him 24 hours a day for an awfully long time. And the honesty with which he addresses them, the humor that he uses, like he seems very conscious. I mean, obviously when you're talking about mental health, is straight away you're like, well, don't use the word nuts. But he does it in that kind of jocular, self-effacing way that a kid from Baghdad, Florida, growing up amongst his group of friends would. Yeah. And I have to say it was very, very interesting. And I probably had a very two-dimensional view of Bubba Watson. I found him a very, you know, obviously a kind of, like, you know, the stuff with Ted Scott certainly would have made you think, oh, is he that nice a guy? And what comes out from this interview is that, yes, he's a very, very nice guy. He's very affable, but he has been racked with this terrible, terrible thing for a good number of years. And he's sought help and is hopefully now kind of come around a bit.
Wow. I distinctly remember a commentator saying the weight loss was down to Watson giving up sugar. So that's obviously totally off the mark.
Absolutely. He wasn't eating. He wasn't eating because of stress. I mean, the idea of, can you imagine freaking out your wife, like where all of a sudden you're waking up and you're having panic attacks to the point that it feels like you're having a heart attack. So they're calling an ambulance and rushing you to hospital in the middle of the night. You know,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, that really is. That's like, you know, that's not past remarkable stuff. That's really serious.
No, it's very serious. I just opened the interview as you were reading it and I see a quote from Ted Scott, his caddy. So Scott saying, I always knew he had fears and worries, but when he started losing all the weight, I knew that was not good, especially because he kept going to the doctor. The doctors were telling him he was fine. They kept running tests. When you get to that stage, something had to be going on with his brain. He wasn't thinking correctly. It was causing him stress. Hmm. Jeez, isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
Just goes to show you though, when we are looking at golfers and professional golfers at the highest level, we never know what's going on in the background.
That's absolutely true.
We never know why they're not playing well, you know, if they're not practicing or something like that. We just don't know. We don't know what could be going on in their lives.
Yeah. We assume one of the interesting ones is that he's afraid of. He said he would stress about being a 2-time Masters champion. And whereas we assume, particularly in today's sports person, is that they have an awareness of basic psychology, that you learn to how to absorb success so it becomes part of your destiny and you can think positive and all the rest of it. That Bubba seemed trapped in the level of expectation that being a 2-time Masters champion came with, and it crippled him and it tore him up. And as Peter, as you said, is this idea that, like, you're looking at a guy and standing on the tee box and you literally have no idea what demons are coursing through him as he's just trying to go about his job, you know?
So it does, I mean, it does seem the breathing exercises are helping and the people he's seen are helping. And Scott here at the end says, I have noticed a difference in the way he's handling stress on the course. Noticed it, especially at the US Open. I mean, Watson was only 31st at the US Open. It wasn't like he had a great tournament. And Watson's obviously speaking, or sorry, Scott's obviously speaking very recently, because he says at Shadow Week and at Sherwood, he seemed to be in a great place. Bubba hasn't lost the physical ability to compete. He's pretty much a freak. It's all just a matter of confidence. And I'd say with Watson, it totally is. If he's feeling it in his hands, you know, he's as good as anybody. So Scott says, I think he's in a very good position going to Augusta. Man, 42 years old now, Watson. I mean, I always felt he'd get a third jacket once he got the second one. I mean, he's made for that place. So him going there feeling much calmer, much better about himself, he's got to be in the mixture. He was 12th last year and not in a good place. That was kind of when he was at his skinniest. He is kind of made for Augusta, Peter.
Yeah, he has. You know, they always say you need to draw the ball around Augusta, and he can hit it whichever way he wants to hit it. So being a left-hander, his natural shot is a fade. If, yeah. Well, that he normally sets up for a fade, which is a draw for a right-hand person. So it's perfect for Augusta. He knows the golf course well. Probably the less fans will help him because it'll be a whole lot quieter. He'll be able to, you know, play within himself and not worry about anybody else and not fret about, you know, who's watching him. So I think these times with no crowds around has really helped Bubba. And maybe that's why he'll put it down to more than anything else.
So a few YouTube comments before we get on to our good friend Jack Nicklaus. So Analysis and Coaching here in the YouTube comments. Analysis and Coaching asks, can you ask Peter Reed Tiger, can it just happen for you on a week when you play well, even though you haven't been showing any form, haven't been playing well, have no feel for any part of your game?
Absolutely, sure. Yeah. How many times have you seen guys miss cut, have maybe seven missed cuts, you know, a half a decent finish and then win? So, of course, yeah, it can happen. Generally, it doesn't, but it can.
Lads, we saw Justin Thomas and Rahm struggle on Sunday to get the job done. Woods with his 82 PGA Tour victories. Do we underappreciate just how easy Tiger made winning tournaments look? Clearly isn't. Joe, I think we underestimate every single thing Tiger Woods did, even though we know we're underestimating it. Like, you can't compute, Fionn, how he did what he did. The margins in golf are so small, it's insane.
It's also of the many, many stats. I mean, we've said it here before. It's the no miss cuts stat, whatever it is. I think is it over 300 or whatever it is. The phenomenon that he is, or that he was, is unprecedented in the history of golf. And as much as he's still three shy of the major record, he's broken every single other record. I mean, absolutely smashed it to the point that, you know, you wonder, will anyone ever touch him? Certainly in our lifetime.
No. Peter Fagan, is there any chance for Spieth at the Masters?
Oh, I would love that.
I mean, that would be...
Same chance as Tiger.
Second to...
Oh, come on.
So you say no. Second to Tiger winning, I think Spieth winning. Well, McIlroy as well, obviously. Spieth would be the dream. I was listening to an interview he did very recently, Peter, and what he says out of his own mouth is, and he freely admits he's stinking the joint out at the moment. Like, Spieth is just so honest about this stuff. But he says when he gets to Augusta, if you work back from the greens, he says no matter how badly he is putting, doesn't matter. He gets to Augusta, he always puts well. Because he said he gets there and it's so much about feel and slope and green reading that he just reacts to the picture in front of him. He says, like, on a lot of PGA Tour events, he's thinking about his technique and he's worrying about his alignment and he's, you know, I got to stand this way and have shoulders here lined up with the hips, all this kind of stuff. Said he gets to Augusta, doesn't think about any of that stuff because the artistry required just kind of, it gets him into a shape without even him, he's not thinking about his body, gets in a shape and he lets it go. So he says once he gets there, and it's the same with his chipping and a lot of the shots around the green, his technique goes out the window and the shot puts him, his body into a position for him, and he lets that happen. So Jordan Spieth always has a chance at Augusta, regardless of what one of the three of us thinks. That person is wrong.
How long are we doing this podcast? And
too long.
I said it from the very start about Spieth, and I knew you all gave out to me, but Spieth would be back to his best if he had done what I suggested a good while ago, was to take a year out, sit on the beach and just forget about golf. And he'd come back now and he'd recreate Jordan Spieth version 2.
Yeah.
But he just has too many, and that's a load of codswallop, I believe, because what you're saying about his pitching and his putting at the Masters, he misses one 2-footer and all of a sudden it's back to emergency, you know, what do I do next? And that's the way, unfortunately, a golfer's mind works. It's not a case of you just go and, you know, the golf course dictates how you play. No chance.
Did you see what they did to him last week or this week? He pitched up at some private country club in Colorado or somewhere and went out with his wife to play a round of golf. And I'm not sure if it was a short par 4 or a par 3, a blind par 3 where you couldn't see the green, but he arrives up and some guy who was watching had picked up his ball off the green and put it in the hole. and Speed arrives up and goes, hey, have you seen my ball? And the guy goes, oh, I think it's in the hole. And Speed was jumping for joy. Like, and he was with his wife, and it was all like, oh my God, I can't believe I aced it. And it was all like if any of us were to do it. And the guy, I think his name was Steve Smith or something. Anyway, he's afterwards, he's going, I realized, oh my God, this gag has gone horribly wrong all of a sudden. And he goes, hey, listen, sorry, Jordan, by the way, look, it was just a prank. And he had marked where the ball was. He goes, I actually put the ball in the hole. And, like his whole Speed's whole look just deflated, but apparently took it in very good spirits.
I'm not surprised.
What a horrible thing to do to somebody.
They used to do that in Greystones Golf Club on the, I think it was about the 16th or 15th par three, where you hit over, you know, down onto the, and the kids used to run in and put the ball in the hole, or the caddies would do it to get an extra tip. They used to do it in the Lahinch as well.
I can just see members of Greystones going, I've had 12 holes in one in my life. Is
there
amazing.
You go, yeah.
Oh, the Dell and Lahinch, yeah, as well.
Oh, my God. Poor old Jordan.
Ultimately, I think Jordan won't win, but he'll have some great moments. He's just not hitting the ball well enough. There's just no getting away from that, you know. Jonathan Kennedy wonders, is Peter on his beach? When's his comeback?
No, unfortunately, maybe seniors tour, but I have a few years before that.
Yeah. Let's just finish up with Jack Nicklaus, who has inserted himself. I mean, we do have a couple of people. I think they're Red State listeners who really don't like when we talk politics. Stick to the golf. Well, Jack Nicklaus is like the most read story on sports websites over here, and Golf Channel are leading with it. So Jack's left us no choice. So Jack Nicklaus has, you know, originally from Ohio, by the way, currently a battleground state, and he's lived in Florida for 50 years. Both of those are tied enough to battleground states. So he's come out to endorse Trump in absolutely glowing terms. Trump has delivered on his promises. He's worked for the average person. I mean, he ignores the fact that the wealthiest percentage in America have never paid less tax, courtesy of Trump's 2017 legislation on tax. But however, he's delivered for the working average person, says Nicklaus. His love for America and its citizens and putting his country first has come through loud and clear. Even Jack concedes, how he has said it has not been important to me. What's been important are his actions. Jack says he told Trump about the tweets. Jack doesn't mention in the statement that he has designed courses for the Trump organization, including Trump National Golf Club Jupiter and New York City course. That doesn't make his statement, nor the massive donation given to his charitable fund courtesy of the government under Trump. He says, and this is the doozy, if we want to continue to have the opportunity to pursue the American dream and not evolve into a socialist America and have the government run your life, then I strongly recommend you consider Donald J. Trump for another 4 years. Trump responded on Twitter, Jack, this is a great honor. Thank you. Dear, oh dear. We on the one hand, we absolutely applaud athletes who use their platform to promote different political agendas. Now, in the main, they tend to be things like issues of police brutality or can we feed hungry children, Marcus Rashford over in England. They don't tend to be endorsing this absolute buffoon, Fionn.
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, look. Are you surprised? He endorsed him 4 years ago, you know. So, like, Nicklaus has never hidden the fact that he's a Trump supporter. But look, it's almost as though the talking point was emailed to him by the Trump people. Because, you know, pursue the America and not evolve into a socialist America. Like, I mean, that's just horseshit. Like, I mean, the idea that somehow, like this, like the most center-right middle of the road candidate like Joe Biden, who is going to protect billionaire money the same as everybody protects billionaire money, it's just preposterous. It's just nonsense. And I can't think of, like, I mean, obviously every golfer or every person has a candidate they prefer, you know. Nicklaus prefers Trump, fine. No, vote for Trump, knock yourself out. But I can't think of a golfer who's inserted himself so much into like the ideology quite like short of like, you know, oh, we're at war and, you know, but like, and little things like, you know, you might not like the way our president says or tweets some things. And trust me, I've told him that, but it's not that. It's like, I judge him on his actions. Like what? Like, you know, endorsing hard right people, like, you know, it's these dog, you know, without getting into it, it's just, it's not even disappointing because, as you said, like, you know, he's a Trump supporter. It's Nicholas is using his considerable platform to shill for Donald Trump. And I'm not surprised by it, but I read the statement and I go, half of it's just garbage. It's just
garbage.
Like,
yeah,
it's the ranting to the lunatic.
Like, Jack Nicklaus is your hero. Well, is my one of my heroes in golf. Jack Nicklaus, savvy. And you listen to somebody like that making a unanimous, giving all his support to Donald Trump, and you really think, you're just so disappointed.
Here's the thing. I think, you know, I have my politics. I can certainly discuss politics with someone who doesn't share the same politics as me. That's fine. But even if you were to like I've known about Donald Trump for 35 years from my days living in New York when, I mean, he's always been a buffoon. He's always been a figure of fun. He's always been the self-promoter that ultimately the only ideology that Donald Trump serves is Donald Trump. And here's the thing. It's not just people who are his opponents that say it. It's people within his own group. It's Republicans say it. The amount of leaking that comes out of the White House that portrays Trump as this like bloviating narcissist who is only concerned with his own ratings and has, like, there was one where he turns around before Hope Hicks like became famous, that she was part of his team and they were watching people outside of Trump Tower kind of running up when they saw him. And he turns around to her and says, look at those sad little people. You know, this is a guy who has never pretended really to care about the average blue collar worker, never. And more to the point, the fact that he can put out this statement in absolute defiance of reality of 2020 and his complete mismanagement of the COVID crisis, I just find shocking, like absolutely shocking.
No, I agree totally. I have no issue whatsoever with the fact that the vast majority of American golfers come from certain backgrounds, were raised Republican, will always be Republican absolutely. And vote Republican. That's totally fine. But Trump is an outlier. And you used the phrase there, defiance of reality. I mean, there's just at this point with Trump, in about 45 different ways, just some pretty grim realities staring you in the face. And you have to choose to ignore them, you know. So Nicholas here is choosing to ignore the obvious. And it is incredibly disappointing.
Look, I mean,
but whatever, you know.
I've known Jack's
tons not, of Jack's, Republicans. Jack's not going to swing the election either way, but it's just a pretty grim thing for him to do. What I'd be curious in, okay, so look, he's done it and he clearly hasn't written the statement himself. What you would love is over a cup of coffee to sit down with Jack and go, and just pick his brain. Like how closely are you following all this stuff? What, for instance, if you know, you're talking about the average American, what did you make of the 2017 tax legislation? Are you on top of that? Do you know what that does? As well as like, you know, the porn star stuff and the way he's mishandled the COVID crisis, and as well as what he said after numerous racial flashpoints where he's rather than calm a situation, has driven a country to the brink. You know, we've seen that this year. I just would love to know, does Nicholas kind of go, whatever, that's all just noise. Or is he on top of that stuff? Because there's like a willful ignorance about this statement that is really, you know, it is really disappointing.
I've known tons. I lived in America for 11 years. I visit the US a lot. And I've tons of friends in the States, all over the States. And a good chunk of them would traditionally vote Republican.
Sure.
And you know, I've no issue with, like, you know, Republicans believe in small government, Democrats believe in slightly bigger government. But when you actually parse it, I mean, one of the interesting stats about the Obama years is that billionaires did better under Obama than they did under Bush. Sure. Like, Obama deported more people back across the border than Bush did in 8 years. That, like, ultimately, you know, the kind of primary issues that drive, you know, debate between, you know, Democratic liberals and conservative Republicans, these are negotiated within an arena where you assume, where you just take a certain level of accepted truths. What Trump, as you said, I mean, you call him an outlier, and he comes in, he kind of just, he operates it. None of it matters. None of it really matters. The only thing that matters is Trump's message. The only thing that matters is Trump's ratings. The only things that matter is him being able to feed and bask in the adoration of the people that attend his rallies. That ultimately Trump isn't there to serve an agenda, with one notable exception, and that is the Supreme Court. I mean, like, conservatives would be thrilled that he has done an unbelievable job, where you have six justices now that lean to the right, and he has filled a whole bunch of other court judgeships, or whatever the positions are, at a host of levels. You know, and that's in pursuit of a Republican agenda, so Republicans will feel that that's a positive thing. But everything else is just nonsense. And, you know, and so for that, to go back to, but then again, you always assume that Nicholas, what is he now, 81, 82, 80, he operates in that bubble. You know, I can't imagine that, you know, Nicholas's social circle is made up of anybody who isn't worth a few million.
Sure. You know, I'm sure when Amber Coney Barrett gets into the Supreme Court, they're all thinking, well, this is just great for America. They're kind of entitled to think that if they want, you know. It is ultimately noise. Like, I had forgotten he'd endorsed him in 4 years. When you said it, I was like, oh, I guess he probably did. It's not like, put it this way, when, you know, Nicholas has passed on and we're thinking about his legacy, anyone will even mention his support of Trump. No. It's not that. But it's the news of the day, if you haven't seen it, that he's one of the more high-profile ones to come out, you have to say.
Absolutely. It's not just I'm voting for the guy that I like, a guy that I have a relationship with. And as you alluded to, is even though it's not mentioned in the statement, this is a guy that has hired me to design a couple of his golf courses. So I have both a financial and a personal relationship with him. Fine. Like, absolutely. But it's no, this is actually saying, here's a statement I'm going to read. I am endorsing, and you know, I think he's the greatest guy, and yeah, whatever. And that's, I think that's worthy of comment.
For sure. So we're pretty much done. The golf this week is in Bermuda, no less. Now, Padraig Harrington was doing well. Oh, he's finishing up okay. First round, he's 3 under through 16. Oh, actually, the lead has changed. The lead is now like 8 under. But it still has Harrington in the top 10. He's actually, you know what, Peter? Since he's come back from his back garden, Padraig Harrington is playing quite well.
Yeah,
he literally did what Jordan Spieth should have done: is go to his back garden, play golf for basically a year, and then come back out.
Exactly, and come back out a better player. I think we need to mention last week's Italian Open. Jonathan Caldwell, best finish of his career. He finished tied for fifth. So really good.
Remind us of Jonathan Caldwell's career trajectory.
Jonathan Caldwell has been struggling. He played Walker Cup, never really made it onto tour, played a bit of Challenge Tour, played a bit of Euro Pro Tour, and got his card last year from Tour School, and has done quite well this year. He's 36 years of age, so he's a late developer, but he's playing well this year now. He's had a couple of good finishes, so really pleased for him. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that one. The winner we were talking about there, a guy who has Ross McGowan, who fell off the planet in 2000 after his win in 2009. He won in Madrid and hasn't been seen since, and then popped up again and won the Italian Open. So it was a real oldies win last week on the European Tour.
Very good. Might try and chat to Jonathan Caldwell at some stage. Oh, it was interesting, the late developers and why it happened.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're pretty much done for this week. So next week is suddenly like we're into Masters preview territory. Masters is basically here. Thanks, as ever, to our sponsors, Now TV, where you can stream sport on your terms. Any Trump supporters, at Fionn Davenport is where you want to direct your comments this week. I will not be responding. And we will talk to you next week. Peter Lawrie, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Fionn, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Stream the Premier League, Serie A, and EFL Championships live on Now TV. Your sport on your terms.